Hello. Ah, now that I've got your attention, I'd like a quick word about how Cambridge 105 Radio is funded. Our job is to give a voice to those groups who may not otherwise be heard. That may be our support for local music or the charity of the month. You're wanting to know how you can help, aren't you? Well, you can support our advertisers. And when you use their services, say you heard about them on Cambridge 105 Radio. And you can make a donation. It all goes towards our upkeep. We're eco-friendly, but we do have a bit of an electricity bill. Visit cambridge105.co.uk and click on the donate button. And thank you for listening.
We're talking about languages and speaking languages today with my guest Tim Morley. Good morning, Tim.
Morning.
Morning. Nice to have you here. Now, you're an Esperanto teacher. There can't be many of those around.
probably not that many. We're probably outnumbered by French teachers, let's put it that way, yes.
Well, how did you get into Esperanto? How did you end up being an Esperanto teacher?
I actually can't remember the first time that I heard about it. I can't remember that. It was probably in a book, but I don't remember. But completely by chance, I happened to be working with a guy who spoke it fluently, who was bringing up his children as first language Esperanto speakers. And so I was like, that's brilliant, teach me that. So he did. That was back in 2001. And I've actually been teaching it on and off since 2002. That was my introduction to it, and of late I've just been last term I was teaching Esperanto at Landmark International School in Fulbourne, and greatly enjoyed by all, I think.
And who do you teach it to?
At Landmark School, that was to years 7, 8, and 9. I've also taught it in primary schools, a number of primary schools around Cambridge. It was a few years ago now, did a TEDx talk at TEDx Grant in Cambridge back in 2012, talking about that, which is on YouTube.
Well, give us a little bit of background about Esperanto. What do you know about it when it first... Because it's an invented language, isn't it?
It started off, as a project by one person back in 1887, Dr. Zamenhof in Bialystok, which is now in Poland. He saw a lot of tension, a lot of fighting around him in the town where he lived between different ethnic groups, between the Poles and the Jews, the Germans and the Russians. And the way he saw it, part of the problem was that they couldn't whenever something came up, they couldn't talk about it because the Germans spoke German, the Russians spoke Russian, the Jews spoke Yiddish, and so without a common language, the option to talk through a problem and try to work it out between them just wasn't there, and so it resorted to fisticuffs and tension. And so the way he saw it, if we have a common language, not to replace anybody's language, but as a common meeting point that we can all use when speaking to someone with a different first language, then we've more of a chance of working things out, of cooperating with each other. It's not going to bring about world peace. Let's be realistic. But it's a useful step in that direction.
Wow, it was a lovely idea. Did he then invent a language from scratch then?
It's not completely made up from scratch. If you look at the language as it is today, if you know a little bit of French or Spanish or German or even some Slavic languages, you'll recognise quite a few of the words in there. It looks kind of familiar if you speak some European languages. The structure of it is simplified, much simpler to get your head around and learn and get on with using than any other language that I've ever come across, attempted to learn or to teach. So you can say stuff and be pretty confident that what you're saying is going to be right without having to worry about exceptions and problems along the way.
Okay, well, let's give it a go then. So you've got a sentence for me. This is a sentence in Esperanto.
Yeah, I've written a sentence down here. It says, mi planas veturi tra Germanio en Julio.
It sounds very Spanish, that. Very Spanish.
Lots of people say it sounds Spanish or possibly Italian. It's actually closest to Croatian in terms of the phonics. I'm led to believe, I don't actually speak Croatian, but I was led, to, believe, I'm led to believe that. But yes, Spanish or Italian is often people's first guess, yeah. So, mi planas veturi tra Germanio en Julio.
Mi planas veturi tra Germanio en Julio.
Tre bone. Tre bone parolas.
And what does that, so mi planas...
Yes.
I plan.
I'm planning.
Mi planas treguru.
Veturi.
Veturi. Travel, transport, driving.
Yes. Yeah. Any of
I
those
plan
things.
To drive.
Mm-hmm.
Treguri.
Tra Germanio.
To Germany?
Actually, through Germany, but yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. En Julio.
and you, Leo, in July?
Exactly that.
Is it really?
Your first ever sentence in Esperanto. Yes, that's exactly what it is, yeah.
I'm planned to drive through Germany in July.
Yes, exactly that.
Okay, well, I asked you on the sound check, I asked you how you got here, and you told me you rode here by bike through Cambridge. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me that in Esperanto?
Yeah, mi biciklis de mia hejmo al ĉi tie per dum dek minutoj.
So, it's quite easy to learn, it strikes me. Have you found that? I mean, if you're teaching primary school children, then presumably it is.
That's exactly why we're teaching primary school children. Now, when I started learning the language, I loved the idea of being able to travel places and meet people, meet Esperanto speakers and stay with them and take them out to the pub and just discover new people and be able to have long, flowing conversations with them. Which I've done, and it's great, and I recommend it to anybody, but that's not why we're teaching it in primary schools. That's a complete different thing. In the primary schools, it's just an easy first language, not just slightly easier, but an order of magnitude easier for the kids to get their heads around and actually start to use. A lot of primary school language teaching, it's great that we have the languages in primary schools, but a lot of the teaching just involves learning phrases and repeating them. And if they want to just go and write a paragraph about what I did at the weekend or what I'm doing in the summer, it's actually really hard, and they never get to the level where they can actually be creative in the second language. With Esperanto, we get to that level. And so children can, I'm not saying it's error-free, but they can have a pretty good go at putting together their own sentences and paragraphs, writing down or even speaking, using a foreign language. And so it's that experience that we're trying to give, that we're giving them by using Esperanto. I'm under no illusions that most of the kids will ever meet another Esperanto speaker in their lives. If they do, that's fantastic, but that's not the aim. That's not why. That's not why it's been taught in schools. It's about having a successful language learning experience and getting to a level, not just trundling along the runway, but actually taking off and being able to fly with a new language.
Because this idea of Esperanto as being a language that sort of puts all of us on a level playing field, I mean, it's a lovely idea, mm-hmm. but it never really took off, did it?
Yes and no. Dr. Zamenhof's original vision of a world where Esperanto is the second language for everybody, and anybody who anytime wants to speak to a foreign person is just going to switch to Esperanto and be understood. Yeah, we're clearly a long, long way from that. When I'm driving through Germany, if I get a flat tyre, I'm going to switch to English. I'll have a little go in German, but my German's not very good, so English is going to get me out of that hole. And Esperanto won't be any use at all. I'm not under any illusions about that. But there are enough Esperanto speakers around the world to make it worthwhile learning right now.
Are there really? How many people speak it then?
That's another good question. The honest answer is nobody really knows. It's a bit like asking how many people in the world can swim? How many people can play chess? How on earth do you start to count them? There isn't an international chess association that everybody has to register. There's just no way of counting them. People learn right, left and centre, and we don't really know. At least a few hundred thousand of good, competent speakers, possibly several million if we're talking about sort of people who can string some sentences together but not necessarily speak fluently for hours. But the honest answer is nobody really knows. But what I can say is there are events going on throughout the year where Esperanto speakers from all sorts of countries meet up and spend a week or 10 days living in one city, sometimes even taking over a hotel or a conference centre, and spending the whole time, 24 hours a day, for the whole time that we're there, just using Esperanto. You can be sitting around a dinner table with a dozen people, and there's two Germans, she's Russian, he's from Iceland, he's Indian, got a Japanese couple in the corner. Don't know where he's from, don't know where she's from, never mind, we're all just enjoying each other's company. And it's great to be able to do that and to a certain extent not even care where somebody comes from. It's not that important, but still be able to interact with all the different people.
Well, you mentioned Japan, Russia, India there. I'd always thought of Esperanto as sort of mainly European. Is it something that's worldwide?
It certainly came out of Europe, and when you see the language written, it looks kind of European, but it's certainly not inaccessible to Asian or African or South American speakers, and certainly in Brazil, there are lots of very active organizations organisations using Esperanto. In China, that China Radio International broadcasts every day in Esperanto. I have a friend who travelled around Japan, visited all the islands, all the main islands that make up the country, staying with different people every 3 or 4 nights. He'd move on to the next host, and met all these different Japanese people from city dwellers to be in the far flung countryside. Stayed with a little Japanese granny who put him up, which is an absolutely lovely person, put him up for 3 or 4 nights in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and they just sat and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked, which was an amazing experience for him, and I'd love to go and do the same sometime if I can. I've still never been to Japan. But I don't know of any other way that he could have done that. English is great to check into a hotel, to ask somebody, oh, sorry, I'm lost, where's the station, where's the post office? Yeah, English will get you by in lots of places. But you very quickly find that when somebody says, yes, I speak English, after 5 minutes, it's kind of run out. English is a very easy language to speak badly. And lots of people...
No, yes, lots of English speakers, yes, speak it badly.
but as a foreign language, it's a good it's a good language to get basic communication, but to have long, detailed conversations about not just about everyday essentials, about essential needs, but about culture, about politics, about family, about jobs, about whatever comes up. Esperanto, you get to that level in Esperanto far, far, far quicker than you do with English. And I've had this conversation numerous times with Japanese and Chinese and Vietnamese Esperanto speakers, where we've been chatting for a while, and I just say, by the way, do you speak some English as well? And they go, yeah, I did 10 years of English at school, 12 years at university, and so on. All right, How do you find speaking English? It's really hard. Still really hard. I always feel like I'm doing it wrong, not getting it right. And how long have you been speaking Esperanto? And they go, 18 months, 2 years. And we're sitting, chatting away, 10 to the dozen, and flowing, easy conversation. So to answer your question at the beginning, it's easier for Europeans to get started with Esperanto, but the advantage that we have at the beginning of recognising some of the words quickly falls away. And in fact, by the time you've been studying it for a year, 18 months, it's very, very much equal between Europeans and Japanese, Chinese, and everyone else too.
So do you think this has a future then? I mean, I must confess, before I had this conversation with you, I always thought of Esperanto as something of a little bit of a joke, an experiment that failed. But you're completely changing my mind on this. So does it have a future?
That seems to be a very popular perception. It's one of those things that people have been predicting its demise for decades, but it's been going along very nicely, thank you, kind of under everybody's radar. And it seems to be having a surge of popularity at the moment, partly due to internet, which has helped all sorts of groups and people who have an interest where there may not be many people who live close to them, but through the internet you can make contact with people across the world, and suddenly the geography doesn't matter anymore. It enables that community building internationally without worrying about travelling. And so it's helped Esperanto, along with many, many others, to get the community building. There's an awful lot of Esperanto going on Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere as well. And yes, it does seem to be having a bit of a surge of popularity at the moment. There's an app called Duolingo for learning foreign languages, and a couple of years ago they announced, we've got an Esperanto course. It's going to be released in beta soon. Sign up if you want to hear about it when it's released. And 15,000 people signed up to be told when this app's coming out. And we thought, that's quite a lot. Okay, this sounds good. The app was released, so the Esperanto course was released on Duolingo, and in the first week, 10,000 people signed up. Wow. And started the course. And by another week later, 20,000 people had signed up. And we were thinking, hang on, there's probably never been a 2 week period in the history of Esperanto where 20,000 people have started learning all at the same time. This is mad. Where's this going to lead? We don't know. And it just kept going. And it was 30,000, 50,000, and 100,000, and then 500,000. And now it's over 1 million people have started the Esperanto course. Now, that started the course. That doesn't mean that we've got 1 million new Esperanto speakers, but about 100 people a day are finishing the course right now. every day 100 people finish the Esperanto course. That's still quite a rate of new speakers joining the world of Esperanto. I'd hesitate to say more than it's ever been ever, but that's a surge in popularity that was unexpected, let's say. It's going to be interesting to see where it leads. The Esperanto movement has been around for decades. There are annual meetings all over the world. I say annual, there are many different annual meetings all over the world. So every day of the year, there's a meeting, international meeting going on somewhere using Esperanto as the common language. Are all these new speakers going to discover these? Are they going to set up their own kind of parallel movement? Is there going to be some crossover? We don't really know.
Watch this space. Well, I can tell you're so enthusiastic about this. You're speaking about this tomorrow evening, aren't you?
I am.
7:30.
7:30 at the Blue Moon on Norfolk Street. It's the Skeptics in the Pub do a monthly talk. This month it's me. It's tomorrow night, 7:30. And the title is A Million People Are Learning Esperanto on Duolingo, But Why?
And people can just turn up at the door?
They can turn up at the door or they can book tickets online.
Look for Cambridge Skeptics, I think, and Skeptics is SK.
Skeptics with a K, yes.
Yeah, Skeptics
in the
with
pub,
a K,
Cambridge.
S-K-E-P,
and yes, you can reserve a place on Eventbrite.
Well, just tell me in Esperanto then, just as we draw to an end, what you're going to do with the rest of your day?
En Esperanto.
Yes.
Do, post ĉi tio mi iros al la bazlernejo de Histon, tie mi instruos la francan al grupo de junaj infanoj. Poste mia patrino estas hejme, do mi reiros tien por manĝi kun ŝi. Kaj post la lerneja tago mi denove instruos la francan, kaj ĉivespere mi pasigos tempon kun miaj infanoj.
And what did you say there?
I said, straight after this, I'm going up to the primary school in Histon and doing a French club with some little kids there. In the afternoon, my mum is currently staying with us, so I'm going to go home and have lunch with my mum. And then after school, I've got another French club at another school, and then I'm going to spend time with my kids.
Lovely. Well, lovely to talk to you, Tim.
You.
That talk again, 7:30 tomorrow evening at the Blue Moon, organised by Cambridge Skeptics. You can turn up, ticket on the door, or Google Cambridge Skeptics with a K. Thank you ever so much. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.